What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This podcast is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the amazing universe of the Elder Scrolls. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. I accidentally hit the wrong button, but you will not know if you're listening on audio because I'm going to fix it in post, and you'll never know that I hit the wrong button during the intro. It'll be cool, but welcome back, everybody. This episode's a little bit out there because that guy next to me, I'm Tom, or Robots, as usual, as I always am, as far as I know.
What guy?
That guy, that right there, that's not Lotus of Doom.
Oh, me.
Yeah, yeah. You. What'd you do with Lotus? This is Rob the Princess. You know Rob from our patron chats and from he helps run the ESO guild, the PC guild. He's in chat every time. I don't think there's an episode in the last 100 episodes that I haven't said Rob in chat said this funny thing. So how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I killed Lotus and I am taking his place. Rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I always joke when someone like meets me in the server and they don't necessarily know me yet. I'm like, oh, you listen to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast? And like, yeah, I do. I'm like, you're about to hear so much from me that against your will that you're going to hate me. Because I'm always in the chat and I always hear you like, oh, Robin Chat says. I'm like, yeah. I'm always there.
Yeah.
Against your will, I'm here.
At like a good orc, you've killed Lotus and now taken his place. And speaking of orcs are your favorite race in Elder Scrolls.
Big strong boys and girls.
Big strong people. And so we were talking because Lotus is off adventuring. He's going to a bunch of video game stuff this week, and so he's not here and able to do the episode with us. But I reached out to Rob because Rob's such a wonderful part of our community and he's active in multiple different ways. I was like, Rob will help jump in here. And I was like, Rob, we could continue through the locations, or we could talk about whatever you want. This could be just kind of a Rob episode. And Rob's like, well, I really do like orcs. And I'm like, all right, well, let's think about it. Take a look at orcs. Take a look at things about orcs. What do you want to talk about? And so what did we land on?
Well, in my defense, I did start with a location. I wanted to keep the theme. I didn't want to break the waves, but my brain doesn't care.
Okay. So your brain doesn't care.
What we're talking about is what I decided to hyperfixate on in the last few days, which is the nature of the orc religion, the nature of the orcs afterlife, the ash pit realm itself, Malekith's realm. So just that concept. Yeah. It's just really cool.
Yeah. Like what do they believe? Where do they go when they die? Like what's going on with the orcs basically with all of that stuff. So let's get into it because this is going to recap some of the things. If you haven't heard the Daedric Prince episode about Malekith, go back, listen to that. But we'll give you a quick little recap here. What is the general consensus about Malekith? I know this is one of your favorite stories.
Well, he's like the disappointed father archetype of the Daedric Princes. That's how I like to describe him. But you're saying favorite stories. So well, are you talking
like
about
the origin
how
of
came to
like
be?
How he came to be? It's generally believed that he was originally Trinimac, and a conflict with Boethia happened. He gets
So
digested, pooped out.
No, that's propaganda, and I will not stand for these lies to be said on the air.
But this is the generally, like, among the Cyrodiilians or the elves, like, this is the generally told story.
It's actually only reiterated in the Dark Elf stories and then the High Elf stories as to show why the Dark Elves are, like, so distrustful. they tell that version of the story. Mm-hmm. And the High Elves and the Dark Elves, I don't really see it too much else tied to a specific culture.
Yeah, well, it seems to be one of those just like well-known stories that like you go anywhere and then anybody knows the story.
The Orcish version, which is the right version.
Okay, so what's the Orcish?
I'm glad you asked, Tom.
What's the Orcish version?
Orcish legends say that when Trinimac confronted Boethia for the Velothi trespass and tried to fight, Mephala appeared and stabbed him in the back, bringing him to his knees, while a gloating Boethia cursed and twisted him and thus turned him into Malekith.
Right.
That's the only version of the story. Anything else is propaganda.
Everything else is propaganda. So if you are one of the orcs, then you still have there. The similarities here are basically Trinimac gets teamed up on for whatever reason and converted in cursed into basically a brand new being. And that new being is now the father of the orcs, and the orcs, the origin of the orcs is tied to that as well. Their creation in certain circles is believed to be tied to that cursing. They take on the curse as well.
I think in every propaganda and all, every telling does include that when Trinimac's form has been twisted and cursed, so are Trinimac's loyal followers. And that is the entirety of the orc race, is just the people who were loyal to Trinimac.
Right. So so if we want to actually understand how Malekith fits into the pantheon of Daedric princes, for example.
He doesn't.
Yeah.
That's his whole thing.
It's weird because like some people would say, oh, he's a Daedric prince. Others would say, he's kind of screwed over Aedra. Those Aedras were all kind of screwed over already, but
true,
you know, with Lorcan and all that, but he's kind of like this now double screwed over. Does he fit into one or the other quote pantheon, or is he actually somehow part of both, and he's like a screwed over member of both things?
That's a very unique question. It's never been asked before. No, I'm kidding. That is the most talked about thing in Orcish culture, potentially. I'm not sure if that's a true statement or not, but it's definitely up there. Like, there's so many cults just debated on that topic alone.
Right.
Trinimac is, you know, seen as one of the greatest, most honorable, powerful Aedra, and then this happens, and now the Aedra cast him away and say, no, he's Daedra, he's not one of us. But then the Daedra themselves are like, no, he's not Daedra, he's not one of us. So no one wants him. He's not fitting anywhere.
Yeah, he's kind of the eternal outsider, right? And that's why
so are his people.
Exactly. And that's why he's worshipped by the races that are themselves outsiders, orcs and goblins and pantheon. We're just using the pantheon all over the place. A whole host of other creatures who are less than desirable in more cultured places.
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually didn't even put that in my notes. Like the centaurs actually worship him. The minotaurs worship him. Goblins, reeklings, a lot of the like cultures of sentient races that are intelligent beings, but aren't seen as intelligent beings. Like, as you guys say in the show quite a bit, the orcs weren't even a playable race until Morrowind. These are just seen as monsters, just like a lot of those other races I just named. They're all seen as monsters, and they're not respected as like actual people.
Right.
Most of those people are the ones who follow Malekith.
Yeah. Yeah. So they don't really, the people who follow Malekith have a very different perspective on all sorts of things. Their version of reality plays out in some ways very differently from their perspective. They're not sitting at the table when like the different nations across Tamriel are debating borders and things like that. They're not included in a lot of that. And the orcs keep getting their land taken away from them, and they're discriminated against as being too violent or beast-like and all of this. And across all of the political spheres and all of that, they're treated like outsiders. But that's not the point of this episode. We want to take that perspective, and we're getting inside the minds of these people and understand what they believe from a religious perspective, and what happens to them when they die. How does this actually play out, and what can we know about that? So let's move into the religion as a whole, just in what they believe, basically. So beyond just the creation of Malekith, they worship Moloch. Many of them just call Malekith Moloch, or Malekith and Moloch might be the same thing, or they might be different things. There's different perspectives. There's a lot of debate about all of that. But in general, they are the worshipers of Moloch. And it's believed that there are a variety of different clans with their own beliefs and rules, but the main commandments that all of the clans tend to ascribe to are, one, do not steal, two, do not kill your kin, and three, do not attack without cause. And if you break any of the rules, you'll pay the blood price. And so that means dead.
The blood price does vary on culture to culture, by the way. They will, like, defining what is acceptable as the blood price is not the same across them, but the blood price as a theme is across all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's a variety of different clans, and the majority of the clans believe in following Malekith or Moloch. They believe in the Daedric realm of the Ash Pit, or it's a place in Oblivion, I guess you could say. Even if you don't consider him a Daedra.
Like the afterlife, they specifically call the Ashen Forge, which I believe is just probably the center of the Ash Pit. The Ash Pit is the realm as a whole, but the Ashen Forge seems to be coming up more when they're talking about the afterlife, but it's all there.
Right. Now, why do they like this version of the afterlife? Why does this match their culture?
Yeah, that's in my notes somewhere.
That's in your notes somewhere. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes on here that is very tied to their identity and the way that they present themselves. So the orcs are fond of battle and strengthening themselves with conflict and all of these things. So when they go to the afterlife, then they not only get like food and drink and all the wonderful things you get about going to this place that you've been longing to go to your entire life, but also endless battle.
Yeah, it very much, like when I read the description, it says here orcs are promised rewards of immortality, abundant food, drink, constant battle deep within the Ashen Forge. It sounds just like Sovngarde, pretty much.
It is similar. It is very similar.
Yeah. And even some similarities to like the Far Shores with the Redguard culture. There's a lot of overlap. And this is one of the reasons why it's like, okay, this is a Daedric realm. Why does this sound like a chunk of Aetherius?
And yeah. So talk about that. Like the connection between this being seemingly being a Daedric realm, or at least a realm of Oblivion, and then this weird connection to Aetherius somehow.
It sounds like a slice of heaven, quite literally. So this doesn't sound bad at all. So on here, it says, lending to the ambiguity of Moloch's Aedric status, it is said the Ashpit Bastion stretches endlessly across the plains, multiple plains, extending even behind the stars to Aetherius. So this imply that the realm will bleed into Aetherius, and it says planes, plural. So that might mean, you know, other planes of Oblivion. It might mean the things that aren't Oblivion, things that might not be Aetherius. It's just the Ashpit seems to be a very vast, stretchy realm that kind of bleeds into a lot of other places. Because again, not quite Aedric, not quite Daedric, kind of something in between. And just like the orc followers, they don't seem to be respected as elves. They don't even seem to be treated as beast folk. There's something else. There's always this something else factor about these people. They are
the other,
the pariah folk, quite right. Literally.
Yeah.
Malekith, the realm, everything.
It's really crazy when you think about the, like, I'm sure a lot of you have seen the, like the charts of like, these are the different realms, and here's Aetherius on the outside, and then the sphere of Oblivion, and then inside of that you've got Mundus and you know,
like, they always try to like put it in like a neat little wheel. They often will try to start with the wheel. That's the whole base of it, but
yeah, the
it
wheel
doesn't
thing.
Ever
but it's weird to think of the Ash Pit as a thing that somehow crosses that boundary, like the boundaries of the Ash Pit, like it's a circle that crosses the boundary between Aetherius and Oblivion.
Yeah. You know, It's the gray maybe. I mean, so nothing is ever set one particular way. I did have a little addendum added. Do you mind if I go off on that?
Sure, go for it.
Right now.
Yeah.
So when it comes to talking about the afterlife, it's like, oh, how do we know that the Ashpit actually does bleed into Aetherius? Someone could just be making that up to make it sound nicer. And then kind of had this realization about these fantastical afterlifes in the series. They're very difficult to refute because not only do we have, as the protagonists of the games that we've played, we've visited the Far Shores, we've visited Sovngarde, we've visited many Daedric realms, but even if we haven't seen all of them firsthand, it's still incredibly likely that these tales that we're hearing about them are very much true. I used to be a lot more hesitant to trust the lore that includes the metaphysical stuff. Cause how could you really know if that's true, honestly?
Right. Cause in our own reality, the idea of like, oh, I died, but I came back to life and I had this vision, and it's like, well, how much can
is
we trust
that? Some guy on Earth trying to start a cult?
Right. Or was that like, something, is that something weird your brain does when it thinks it's dying? Like, there's a lot of explanations for what that could be, and very little in the realm of hard facts. But,
and so I have that personal bias. It just wants me to deny that. I'm like, oh, we don't know if Sovngarde exists. And then Skyrim comes out and I'm like, no, Sovngarde does exist. I went there.
Right.
But
we've
even
brought
that,
souls back from there. We can summon them and ask them what things are like, and they can answer the questions.
Yeah. And so it's like, not only that, but like, oh, I know what's going to happen to my soul, not because some guy told me and convinced me, but because my grandma's dead and I asked her and she said that, like, that could be the case. That's right. It right there. And it's like, you can't deny that.
Right.
And there's like so much fantastical magic in this world that it's like everything that we hear about these afterlives are like definitely true, unless they're just, you know, told by Vivek, then don't.
Well,
trust it.
I mean, if not definite, if not every detail is definitely true, there is some sort of substantial quality to it.
Like there is still
a
foundation narrator factor. You
sure.
Still want to
sure. There is, but there is a foundation of reality there. Like if you are an orc and during one of your festivals you're worshiping Malekith and he shows up, and like a vision in the fire and everybody sees it. It's not a mass hallucination. Like, you're
seeing. So when they say that it does bleed into Aetherius, at first I was like, there's no way that's true. But like, why would that be a lie? Why would someone put that in there? That it's evidential proof because they have like the resources to figure that out.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective, and I hadn't quite thought about it exactly in that light, which is really cool. So thanks for sharing that concept. Now, when we get into the details of the Ash Pit, you were saying it seems like a paradise, but it's still kind of a dangerous kind of place. So, for example, according to the article on the UESP, it says the realm mostly consists only of dust, palaces of smoke, How do you go upstairs in a smoke palace? I don't know how that works.
You get high.
I guess so.
That was a pun.
And
smoke high.
And vaporous creatures, anguish, betrayal, and broken promises like ash fill the bitter air. Few mortals manage to reach the realm where levitation and magical breathing are necessary to survive. The Mages Guild have been known to bottle this thick, roiling vapor. This is something that you can actually like travel there, brave it as a mortal, as a living being who isn't able to breathe the air, and bottle this up and bring it back. It's pretty cool.
I love the description of how it says like it consists of like anguish, betrayal, and broken promises, because like it really embodies Malekith again on how he was betrayed as Trinimec, and that's like the whole reason everything about this exists is surrounded by betrayal and broken promises and pain. So
I think
love that description.
It sounds a lot like the emo poetry that everybody writes when they're like 16 years old.
He is emo.
He's pretty
very
emo.
But he has very good reason to be emo.
Yeah, it's true. But if I was to write the lyrics to a song and I used like that in it,
he's more like the angry emo, not like the everything sucks. He's like everything sucks.
Yeah.
So he's angry about it and he's proactive about it.
Right.
That's why I like him.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Ashen Forge. So the Ashen Forge sits at the center of Malakath's own stronghold in the Ash Pit. So this is like, if you're going to the Ashen Forge, you're hanging out with Big Daddy himself. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like party at the palace, right? For the orcs that revere Malakath, the afterlife promises rewards of immortality, abundant food and drink. And this is what you read earlier, and constant deep battle within the Ashen Forge. Now, you might think of deep battle as being something dangerous and scary, but if you grow up in a society as violent and all about honor and strength and those kinds of things, this is a constant eternity of being able to test your mettle and continue to improve yourself, which the case here would be that the Ashen Forge is not forging steel and metal and weapons. It's forging the souls that are there to become stronger through combat eternally.
Yeah, and you can even see in the commandments, it's kind of implied, it's like baked into their culture. Do not attack without cause. You're fine to attack your people, that's fine. Not without cause, though.
Right.
Because they're all about violence. They love violence.
Be
it's a
justified
sport to them
in it
more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, there was actually an instance from the Greg Keyes book that where they had visited the Ash Pit. Let me see if I can find that in here. There it is. Some areas of the realm are safe for mortals. In 4E 48, Malakath chose to bring Sol and Prince Atribus Mead, which were, I'm guessing, the main characters of the book. Haven't read it yet. Where they found the garden of slender trees and vines festooned with lily-like flowers wound about the trunks. A multitude of spheres moved deep in the colorless sky, as distant and pale as moons. This garden seemed to have some emotional significance to Malakath, who described it as a shadow of a garden and an echo of something that once was. Back to his emo-ness. I love it.
Yeah. Well, it also emphasizes this idea that Malakath has not always been in this form. Has not always been cursed.
Yeah.
And in some ways longs for the time before that, before this change happened.
Yeah.
And can see beauty. I mean, like, these are beautiful
flowers.
Yeah, he's not
all angry and death. He's in forge and blacksmith. He does like the forge part, but like he has a garden. He misses his home. And the whole place is made of ash and smoke, as kind of like this is a silhouette of what once was. This whole realm is a silhouette, effectively. It's lost its color. It's lost its life, but it's all still there.
Yeah. And the fact that he still keeps a garden, I think, is particularly interesting. Like, like, yeah, in this ash heap, this land of just dust and almost nothingness, shadows and smoke. You know,
I assume the plants in the garden are probably also made of ash.
Maybe.
But I don't maybe. Know. It doesn't actually say, but I assume because it just kind of like it's just the garden that used to be or a shadow of it, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah, it's really cool. It's like the imagery here is really interesting and really neat. And as a people who grow up in a society that is shunned by everyone else, you can see why they would feel at home here. Because their lives are full of strife and things being taken away from them and being crapped on by the other races. And yet they can go to a place like this and they can honor their journey in like this maximum kind of way. This is who we are and this is who we will stay. It's interesting.
You're not supposed to say crapped on when talking about orcs. Only other orcs can say that.
Okay. Well, tell you what. Let's take a quick break. We got to thank our patrons. And we've got some more stuff to get to. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
It's that time. Holiday shopping is here. And I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No, this is a place that has high-quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one-of-a-kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons, and it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons for being so awesome and helping to support this show. And first off, we've got to shout out our newest patrons. We've got Vance P and Berg and Jacob K, our newest tier 5 patron. So you're going to get another shout out in just a minute. And Taylor H and Edward N, welcome to the Patreon. Thank you for your support. And we have to shout out our Daedric Princes, which include Jacob K, who's our newest Daedric Prince, Kira C, Neon Knight, and Noodle El Dente. Thank you for your support. Thank you for all 133 of our current patrons and your support. If you are interested in checking out what you can get on Patreon, go to patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out all the different items, ad-free stuff, ad-free episodes, early episodes, stickers, t-shirts, and you can join us for our patron chat, which happens in just 1 week on the 30th. Thursday the 30th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And if you are a tier 4 or higher patron, feel free to join us. We'd love to have you jump in. Rob will be there. We'll be chatting up about something. We haven't decided yet, but we'll figure it out. And if you haven't signed up at a tier 4 or higher and you want to join us, you still have time. So go check that out if that's something you're interested in. Thank you to everybody for your support. Also, we have a new review. This is from Apple Podcasts. If you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. This is from Warcrew 566780 in the United States. He writes, "The only thing that keeps me going, this Lorecast alone is what gets me through the workday. Both Robots and Lotus bring intelligent and insightful information to each episode. The patron chats never fail to give me a chuckle and offer many other perspectives on topics from the Elder Scrolls. I always waiting for the next hot take from Falcon." I love that. Yeah, Falcon's always got some good hot takes. Thank you, Warcrew, for dropping that in Apple Podcasts. That always helps to get these 5-star reviews. It lets people know that the show's worth checking out. So if you do decide to leave one, we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. And a big update has happened on Spotify. You can rate the show on Spotify, but now as long as your app on your phone updates, mine has updated. I know some people still haven't updated, but double check, because each episode you'll see where it says, "What did you think of this episode?" And you can leave a little comment per episode if you want. So that opens it up kind of in a strange way, because we could potentially get way more comments on those. I can't read those all out on the show because that'll take forever. But if you would like to leave us a positive comment on the episodes about something particularly you liked about that episode, that would be great. And just like commenting on a YouTube video, "Hey, I really like that you mentioned this thing," or "What about this?" Feel free to drop that stuff in there. I will check it out. And, I'm sure I'll see it. Other people will see it, and it will be very beneficial to the show if you want to help us out that way. So thank you to everybody and your support. Let's get back to the rest of the show.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, we're back. Now, we've talked about the Ash Pit. We've talked about the main belief among the majority of orcs in the clans.
I did do a little boo-boo, I think. I skipped a little tiny fact. When we were talking about how the Ash Pit does bleed into Aetherius, I forgot to say what that means for the afterlife of the orcs.
Yeah.
When they pass to, they go to the Ash Pit, they can choose a more traditional afterlife, is how it's phrased in the UESP, and just choose to go to Aetherius because that realm is connected. They can just choose to stay in the realm of the Ashbit, or they can move on to Aetherius if they want. So that's really cool that Malekith doesn't necessarily force them to stay there.
Yeah, that's great that they have the freedom to make that choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is really cool. So the majority of orcs have this general belief, but there have been times in the history when specific kings have tried to shift belief and worship back to Trinimac. Now, why would they do that?
For the polls.
for the polls, because it's a political move.
I mean, yeah, it quite literally is for a majority. I think it's safe to say every single time they've done that was a political move. They are just trying to gain the favor of the neighboring regions, whether it be High Rock or just the Empire or Hammerfell. They are like, oh, we don't worship Malekith because we know you hate him. Right. So we worship Trinimac.
Trinimac's in Aedra. You guys love Aedra, right?
Trinimac's the best. You saying you hate Trinimac? That's pretty rude, dude.
That's pretty rude, dude. Yeah, so this was King Curog of the Second Orsinium and King Gortwog Gro-Magorn of Nova Orsinium. Both of them attempted to do this, and then as soon as they were no longer in power, everything went right back to the way it was before. Everyone's like, now we're Malak's the guy. We're worshiping.
Which just shows that it was just an empty kind of political move. Although the people following it don't see it as an empty political move. The people following it are like, oh, yeah, let's follow Trinimac. He sounds great. They are, you know, all about it and they go into it. But then as soon as the mandate goes away because the king who pushed it into force is no longer there to mandate it, everyone else just goes right back to Malak.
Yeah, it didn't stick. So that has happened a few times. It's similar to what we were in the pre-show. I was talking about this in ancient Egypt in like the 1300s BCE. Akhenaten, one of the pharaohs.
Byzantine.
Thank you. Changed the location of the, not only changed the capital city, but also mandated that the religion switch to a monotheistic religion. Like we know about the Egyptian pantheon and Osiris and Ra and all of those. Well, he was like, no, we're only going to worship one. And that also in that instance only lasted as long as he was pharaoh. And then it went back to how things were before because everybody else didn't like that idea. So this, a lot of times we'll find, we've noted this before, you find things in the lore that mirror things in the real world. Now, there are some other religious orders and cults among the orcs. I'm just going to go quickly through this list. There's the Agra Krun, which is a religious order dedicated to protecting the sacred word of Malekith, which translates to blood shield in the common tongue. The group operates in secrecy, but for the few that know of them, they are seen as a beacon of light. So Agra Krun, Agra Krun. All of these things sound like things you could yell as an orc. And then there's Malekith's Brutal Breed, which is a group of fanatical Malekith followers that existed during the First Era. So now we're going way back in time. Their main purpose was to wipe out and murder Bretons and Red Guards for every real and imagined slight perpetuated by them against the orcs. Legends about the cult say that the group sacrificed an entire Breton village to the Ash Pit.
I miss the good old days, you know, back in Orsinium when they really knew what was what.
You know, you just slaughtered an entire village. That's
yeah,
cool.
Back in the good old days, we just, if I even thought you looked at me wrong, even if you didn't have eyes because I took them last time, I'm gonna kill you.
Your dog looked at me weird. I'm gonna kill you. Yeah. And then there's the Voshrok, which are a group of fanatics. Why are they all fanatics? Dedicated to the worship of Trinimac, their goal is to bring the orcs back to their Aldmeri roots. Voshrok in Orcish translates to Blade of Courage, which directly refers to Trinimac's legendary weapon, the Penitent. They see themselves as the sword made manifest, and their goal is to rid the tradition that held the orcs back for many years. And like we noted before, any of these movements to go back to worshiping Trinimac never really lasted. And then there's the Wrathful Flame, which is a religious order dedicated to lighting Malekith's pyre in the ruins of First Orsinium. So these are some of the little cults and other little groups.
I also forgot, I was telling you earlier as well, the word of the day. I learned a new word while looking at this, because the way they describe the Orcish religion as a whole is monolatrous. China Street. What is that?
Yeah, talk about that.
That just means they worship one god without denying the existence of all the other gods. They know they're all there, but they don't care about the other gods. They are monolatrous in that they are like, yeah, those ones are there. We like Malekith. We worship Malekith. And that's actually very unique to Tamriel. I only did like a brief like scope through my memory and some like brief research. And I was like, yeah, I think they're only one of two cultures in the entire like series that does this. And that's the orcs and the Skull, who I think they worship the Allmaker, is what they call him.
I mean, it sounds right. Off the top of my head.
I think it's the Allmaker. I think those are the only two cultures in the entire series that are, you know, worshiping a single deity when everyone's very much aware that these other deities are in fact there. They're not denying the existence of any of them, but for some reason these cultures only worship one.
Only worship
one.
It's
very unique.
Right. Yeah. Like if you're raised, you know, in Skyrim or Cyrodiil or Somerset, you understand that there's a pantheon of gods and you may pray to specific ones at certain times, or maybe you just like one more than the rest. But it's rare to just be like, yeah, I only worship Akatosh. That's it.
Well, and also on a mainstream level, it's very unique. Because like a person saying, oh, I only worship Akatosh, that's, I guess, still a bit weird, but not as uncanny. But having like an entire civilization say, no, we only worship this one. That's where it's very weird.
Right, right. Yeah, it's interesting. This is one of those things that I think a lot of people don't think about in our own world, tying things back to reality. In the modern world, if you are part of a monotheistic religion, then your belief is that your god exists alone and other gods are fairy tales. And so if you worship the Christian god or the Muslim god or whatever, this is my god. This is the only god. But
yeah.
But yeah, this is just examples.
Calling them fairy tales. I'm like, that's not necessarily, but yes.
But like, I've been in and around this for a while, and the majority, if you walk up to a Christian on the street and you say, did or does Thor actually exist? They'd be like, no. Or you said, but then if you said, what about Allah? And if they're a Christian, they're going to be like, maybe they're just misunderstanding my God, but there's...
Well, that's kind of where like, does Thor exist? It's like, well, we believe that they just misinterpreted this religion and it's actually my God.
Yeah. And some people will say that. Some people will say that my God is the only God, and other people have seen aspects of my God, which have led them to misunderstand the truth. And so they end up worshiping just a small piece of the truth or something like that. Some people will say, no, those people are absolutely mistaken. Those things never existed. And it's just all fairy tales.
All
right.
Of them.
Yeah. It's just the people just didn't know better back then or whatever. Right. And this is in our world. It's very, we live in a diverse enough culture where it's individual to the individual. It's where you reach in your own spiritual journey and whatever you believe and all of that. And you might have, I mean, you walk into a church on a Sunday and you ask every single one of the people in the pews their theology, and they're all going to have slightly different takes on everything, right? Like we all have diversity in that. And what you're seeing here is, yes, there's diversity among the orcs, but for the most part, they're pretty secure in this is the way things are. And like you were saying before, like if you know that grandma went to the ash pit and she's still there because you were able to communicate with her somehow through magic or whatever, like you've just got proof. So it creates less diversity, I think, that the solidness of evidence.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So it's kind of, I don't know. I think it's a really interesting perspective on this stuff. We've talked in some of the other episodes as well about the nature of what happens to souls when they die. I saw some conversations on the Discord. I think it was a few weeks ago. People were just throwing out ideas like, well, what happened? How do you know where your soul's going to go when you die? Right? Like it's,
if you worship Malekith, the answer was no one knows, but I guess we kind of do know.
I mean, it seems like for the most part, if you make a deal with one of the Daedra, or at least one of the most powerful beings in the world, and that's the only deal you've made, and they honor the deal,
So if those things happen, then your soul does the thing that they said it's going to do. So for Malekith, it goes to the ash pit. For
Aetherius,
but it goes to the ash pit, and you have the option of going to Aetherius, right?
Yeah.
You know, for Nords, you go to Sovereign Guard. For different races, you do what, like if you make
a choice for the Red Guard, so on. Right. So
if you make a weird, wacky deal with Sheogorath, maybe you end up in the Shivering Isles. We don't know, but there are souls there doing weird and wacky stuff, and somehow they got there. Or if you get captured by one of these, I don't know, more malevolent Daedra, then maybe you get taken to their realm, and then you never can escape, and that's just where you go.
If you become a vampire, you're damned to be in his realm again, whether you want it to be or not.
Right. But what happens if you both become a vampire, but you're an orc that worships Malekith? Does the vampire overrule the connection with Malekith? Do they have to duke it out? Is there
in that specific example, yes, the vampire does overrule it because it's literally in your blood.
Yeah, maybe. Or is there once a millennia, the Daedra princes all duke it out for the souls that have mixed endings?
Yeah, I think there is kind of a wrestling contest of some sort with the powers that be when that happens. That's the only thing that makes sense, but it also seems very tedious for them to keep up with all of the souls that are coming in and out. And they're like, you can just have that one, bro. I'm tired today.
Yeah, I feel HG in chat says, what about becoming a werewolf? Yeah, so if you become a werewolf, do you go over to
Hircine's curse of being a werewolf and Molarbel's curse of being a vampire? I think those supersede it every single time because they are a curse. They are not a deal. You did not pray to them. You didn't make a deal. It wasn't something that was agreed upon. This is happening whether you want it to or not. So I'm assuming those ones specifically would supersede.
Potentially. But yeah.
Then you have arguments well, what about the Dragonborn who promised his soul to every single entity that you could even think of, and also could have become a werewolf or a vampire, or if you have console commands, both.
right. Or what about every player character in ESO who is soul shriven, and what if the majority of them never get their souls back?
Well, if they never get their soul back, when they die, nothing happens except their soul remains trapped in Cold Harbor. That makes sense.
It just stays
their souls
in
are
Cold
trapped
Harbor.
There.
Right. But
so
what if
happens? You lost
what if
soul.
Their soul is trapped in Cold Harbor, but then they become a vampire? I guess it stays in Cold Harbor.
Then they go
Molag
back to
Ball.
Cold Harbor a second
Wait,
time.
Cold Harbor is Molag Balls.
Yeah. Right.
So what if you become a werewolf? Down. Then what if you become a werewolf?
Well, then we're back to the arm wrestling again.
They have to arm wrestle, right? There's I don't know. There's a mix of stuff here. Also,
it's messy. Yeah.
Then
with the Dragonborn, it's it's such a powerful entity. It's a more powerful soul is the rumors. You see it on Reddit threads. Dragonborn, we're just going to choose where they go. It's maybe. But maybe not.
Or the Nerevarine, really, right?
Same
kind of thing. This is supposed to be the second coming of that, of the Nerevar.
Yeah.
Did they come back? But then where do they go after
the
that?
The whole thing of Morrowind was whether or not that prophecy was really true or not. So that's still a bit of a gray area, but.
Right. It's another one of those gray points. But then there's the whole thing. And so everyone knows, we've covered most of the stuff we wanted to cover about orcs on this episode. If there's anything else, Rob, that you wanted to point out, let me know. This is why it's kind of fun to go off on this tangent at the end here. But then you have souls that just get trapped in the world. Spirits, ghosts and those kinds of things maybe they didn't make a deal, or maybe they slept through the cracks. It's almost like the visual I get is that where the souls end up is a really complex, really complex mini golf course. Right. and when you shoot your ball into one of those contraptions in a mini golf course, and there's multiple places it could fall down into, almost like a Plinko machine, game. Right? And then it ends up in one of the things, and then it comes out a tube and it gets closer to the hole, or it goes over to this other side, or in the sand trap or whatever, right? I feel sometimes souls, for the most part, go where they're supposed to go. Goes up into the machine, and it's oh, you're going to the ash pit, now you're in the sand trap. It goes out the tube, right? But sometimes you hit the ball too hard or in a really weird way, and it goes it bounces off the thing in a weird direction or falls through the cracks.
There's no way we're going to be able to make sense of ghosts in Tamriel, because Tamriel doesn't make sense of ghosts. There are, like, depending on where you're at and what time it is, and if you know all the stuff, there's 11 different kinds of ghosts.
Yeah.
There's like the animus, and then there's your soul, which is somehow different from the animus of your soul. And then there's the, they always split it into like a game mechanic. So like, oh, here's the health of your being and the stamina of your essence and your magicka, all split into three parts. They do that a lot with the ghosts.
Yeah.
But like none of them are any one set coherent way. So, and my guess there is that like they're either souls that were going to go to Aetherius and something has, you know, occurred in their life or afterlife that got them stuck here, or they were intentionally put there by like a Daedric prince who is like, oh, I'm gonna keep you trapped on Tamriel as a ghost until you figure this out,
or as a form of punishment or whatever. It yeah. also, but like you were saying before, sometimes it seems like they get trapped because of like unfinished business or whatever, like the traditional kind of like, oh yeah, the place is like haunted because they died and they didn't, they're, you know, they're mourning their lover.
Common underlying factor is if they are right. still a ghost, so they have unfinished business of some kind,
right? So what that implies though is that whether intentional or not, your soul has some control, even after death, of continuing to the place where it should go or not. So if you're an orc and you've been worshiping Malekith, you're a good orc, you've worshiped Malekith your entire life, you're expecting to go to the ash pit, on some level, there's still control where you can keep your soul from going to the realm of Malekith. Or...
the way maybe. I took it was if it's tied to a Daedric realm, no, unless it's by the choice of another prince or that prince. Maybe they are
maybe
specifically
not.
Doing it.
I mean, that would but mean that.
I guess there's no, that's just my inclination from my own internal thoughts. There's nothing saying yeah. that. So.
Well, if part of Malekith's, if the Ash Pit actually exists in Oblivion, then technically it would be like a Daedric realm. And yet, any orc that would, if that's the case, no yeah. orc would ever be a ghost, or at least not a ghost for that reason.
Right. You unless their soul was going to go to Aetherius in the end,
instead,
anyways,
and somehow got shortcut.
Maybe,
I guess
because like I feel like Aetherius doesn't have a hold on the souls because it's all like the Aedric realms and the Aedra are like kind of dead but kind of not, and they'll just let you come to them when you're ready. They don't have as much of a hold, whereas the Daedra are a lot more proactive in it.
Yeah.
Like, we want these souls.
Yeah.
So that was my theory on it, but there's nothing really saying it has to be that way. So you could be absolutely right with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff yeah. out there. It's this interesting thing, but yeah. So anyway, I think that's most of what we wanted to cover today. Was there anything else? Cool.
One thing, and I'm only bringing it up now because they had nothing to do with the episode. I just found this in my research and I was like, oh, that's neat. I should bring that up because I didn't know that. Did you know that Orsinium is still standing in the Fourth Era?
I think so. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it that much.
If you were to ask me,
is Orsinium still, is Orsinium standing in the Fourth Era? I would say probably because they keep remaking it.
Yeah, but they keep breaking it down too.
They break it down,
and
they
are really down in the dumps this time around.
Yeah, but that's the nature of the orcs, is that like they get knocked down, but they get back up again. They're like Chumbawamba.
They are like just like Chumbawamba.
Chumbawamba. If nobody's gonna know that reference,
it's not 1990 anymore.
We could sing the song for you. Look up Chumbawamba if you don't know the song. The orcs are like Chumbawamba.
I'm trying to remember the name of the song itself, but I don't think it's called Knockdown. I don't know. But I found out that Orsinium is still standing.
Tub Thumping.
Yeah.
That's the name of the song.
The most recent Orsinium is just south of the Dragontail Mountains. And it's like, so Markarth is just on the other side of the Dragontail Mountains in Skyrim. It's pretty much just on the other side of that mountain range in between Markarth and Dragonstar, you just talked about Dragonstar yeah. and being in the Craglorn area, which is like Hammerfell, but right on the border of High Rock, Hammerfell, and Skyrim.
Yeah.
So that's where Orsinium is right in between that area. So now Dragonstar is right on the border of four areas.
That's crazy.
There's probably a four corners in Tamriel. That's cool.
There's four corners. Yeah, but that also means that if we're going to that zone in the next Elder Scrolls game, we might get an Orsinium as a location.
Yeah. Depending on how far they jump, it might have been destroyed again by the next time we get to the next installment of Elder Scrolls, but it would be really cool.
Yeah. And assuming they do the entire zone and they reach that far back to the mountains that we've already been on the other side of, but you know, they could.
Yeah. It'd be cool if we got like a Hammerfell game, assuming that that is the most popular opinion. And then from there we get a bit of Orsinium because it's right in that area. That'd be really cool.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of potential in the next Elder Scrolls to see things from some of the races that we don't see as much from. So getting more fleshed out about the orcs, getting more fleshed about the Red Guard particularly, and that part of the world. But then you also have, I mean, I feel like always you're going to have the Khajiit, other than in ESO, the Khajiit and the Argonians are always going to be like the wacky foreigners. Always. And in this case, though, if you do have that zone, it borders on so many other zones other than like any major elven zones. But it could be a very human centric kind of game with all the different cultures kind of merging together in that one place.
Yeah, I wish that Shadowkeep was not made when it was and with the game system that it was when they tried to make it on the Nokia.
Yeah.
Engage, because that one has a very awesome location for the game setting. It's in Dragonstar. So it's got the Nords from Skyrim. It's got the Red Guards from Hammerfell. It's got the Bretons from High Rock. All of their cultures clashing together, right, in Dragonstar and Azure's Passing. And it's just a really cool opportunity for the games. We don't really get to see a lot of the interesting interactions there because it's a Nokia Engage game made in the early 2000s.
Right,
but
right.
Hopefully we get another shot at that and we get another game in that area. Because I find that area just so interesting because not only is it those, but you have the orcs as well. They're always in that area, whether they're further north up or maybe they're right in that area, depending on where Orsinium is. The Reach are always in that area as well. The Minotaurs are Colovians in northern Cyrodiil.
It's close to that, like the Colovian side of Cyrodiil.
Yeah. So you have, that's what I was saying, the Minotaurs are in northern Cyrodiil, and then you have the Colovians as well. So there's a lot of culture clashing right in that area. That's the sweet spot, in my opinion. I want to see more areas, more games focused in that area. It's such a cool area.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Or like an Orsinium in the middle of all of that, vying for its existence, like justifying existence among many cultures that
it's
are trying
a tough
to like
place to hold the throne.
Yeah,
it's pretty ballsy of them to settle this newest Orsinium right in that area because that's where everyone's at.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Well, Rob, thank you for joining me. This has been a lot of fun. I hope you had a good time.
Thank you for letting me join. I've been keeping my cool and I try to not make you feel uncomfortable, but this was so exciting. This is literally my favorite podcast.
Aww.
And I am so excited to be here. So thank you.
Oh, well, thanks for joining me. And we'll do this again next week, but with a whole bunch of other people. So that'll be fun.
I'll see you next time.
Yeah. You got anything else you want to share before we head out?
Yeah. I mean, for anyone who is in Las Vegas and is listening to this, like as soon as it's released, catch me at the Pirate Festival in Las Vegas because I am literally after done recording this. I am going to get packing and get dressed in my pirate gear, and I am going to Pirate Festival.
Awesome.
That's what I do.
Awesome. Can you share some pictures? Pixar didn't happen.
Yeah. I'm really bad with photos. I'll try to take a photo or two.
If you get a few, share them. I'm sure.
I just get my friends. I'm like, hey, you took photos. Can you send me one of those?
There you go.
I'll post it in the Discord. Yeah, I'm always dressed like a pirate during that time. And then I will be at the next patron chat. You can follow me on Twitter, Rob the Princess. I don't really post much, but I'm still there, so you can do it anyways. PC guild leader for the Lorecasters, as mentioned at the beginning. So if you send your application or if you don't know where to do that, reach out to me. I'll happily help you join and we can play ESO together. I'll show you the ropes if you're new, or I'll ask you for some ropes if you're more experience than me, and we can all join together and have a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. Also, we'll see you and everybody else going to Las Vegas in just a few weeks. We're 3 weeks out.
Gosh,
three weeks out from Las Vegas.
3 weeks.
I've booked my flight.
So excited for that.
We got a flight booked. Everybody's planning on going. And again, we'll post some more stuff on the Discord as we get like to the
slumber party at my house.
So we're all hanging out at Rob's house.
Yeah. Please don't actually try to come to my house.
Don't worry. It'll be all right. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. And of course, you can check out the rest of my shows at robotsradio.net. If you're looking into other shows, other Bethesda games, other Lorecasts, other shows on the network by other hosts that are doing awesome stuff, go check that stuff out if you're looking for more podcasts. And we'll see you next week with the patron chat. So everybody stay safe out there. And, you know, if you go to the Ash Pit, go visit the garden. I hear it's beautiful. I'll see you guys later.
Marion Orc.
Bye, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach me on Twitter at robots_radio or Lotus of Doom at Lotus of Doom. Also, you can join us on the Robots Radio Discord channel. You can easily just search Robots Radio Discord on Google or check the description underneath the podcast. Also, this podcast is recorded live every week on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on the Robots Radio channels on Twitch, YouTube, and on Facebook. So just search Robots Radio on any of those platforms. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you while we record the show, or before or after. Either way, just come hang out with us. And if you're looking for more information about my shows and the shows on the Robots Radio Network, go to robotsradio.net for all the information about all the shows on the network, including the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where I help both new and existing podcasters to grow their shows, build their audiences, and create the best podcast they possibly can. All of that at robotsradio.net. We'll see you next time.